Let me tell you about a product that I am using personally, and I really think this works. You know, beetroot juice has been used by Olympic athletes for its stamina-boosting effects, and studies show that it can increase athletic performance and stamina by 16%. So call 800-738-2198 or go to intelligentbeets.com, and you can get a 30-day supply free of this great product. It comes with your first order, and it's backed by a money-back guarantee. 800-738-2198. Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoff, and we're talking to Dr. Thomas Gwilliams. He's a good colleague of mine who is the Vice President of Science and Regulatory Affairs for Orthomolecular Products. It's a nimble, high-quality vitamin company that provides supplements to clinicians. You know, not usually available at retail pharmacies, but available mostly through doctors like myself. And, you know, doctors demand the highest quality, the most efficacious products. So Orthomolecular is well positioned to provide those. He's also the clinical instructor at Wisconsin School of Pharmacy. Hey, do pharmacy students like to hear about nutrition? You teach nutrition there?
Well, yeah, we have a course. There's a course on dietary supplements and herbal medicine, and so yeah, it's a elective course. So there's not everyone goes through it, but
should be required.
Quite a few of the students do.
Should be required, yeah. Because you know, if 60% of the populace is taking vitamins and supplements, pharmacists need to know about that. They also need to know about, you know, even if they don't want to prescribe that stuff, they need to know about drug nutrient interactions, and so they can inform their patrons, their clients, about you know, potential beneficial interactions, but also potential harmful interactions, right?
Yeah, it's a big area, and I think you're right. I think the lack of knowledge that's out there has created problems that shouldn't exist.
Okay, so in your book, you have a very pithy chapter: "Let food be your medicine, diet is intervention," and it starts with a quote from Maimonides. Who was a medieval Jewish scholar in the time where the Jews lived side by side with the Muslims in Spain. It was considered a golden age of learning and culture. That's the time when they built the beautiful Alhambra, which you can find in the south of Spain. And his quote was, "No disease that can be treated by diet should be treated with any other means." So I understand, a little interesting sidelight, you're actually a biblical scholar, right?
Well, one of my side notes is the study of Second Temple Judaism and early Christian studies and all the ramifications around that time period. So yeah, that's one of my hobbies.
Okay, so just to keep, you know, just to keep your mind active, you know, after you've read, 35 scientific papers in your office, you go back home and then you delve through the ancient Aramaic and Hebrew. And
I just took a picture in my office, 350 papers I've laid out as I'm writing my newest clinician's handbook on stress. So I do a lot of reading.
Okay, and hopefully that you find it non-stressful to do that. That kind of that's right in your wheelhouse. Okay, so anyway, in this chapter, you know, let's get to practical information. You issue 7 principles, I believe it is, for choosing a healthy diet. Do you recall those?
Right. So, in all of the chapters, including this one, what I attempted to do with this book is boil down these ideas in principles that I hoped would be forever. I mean, these principles would be useful no matter what the science tells us. We could always go back and refit whatever we know about the science into these principles. So do you want me to name off all 7 of them and then we'll come back to them?
You could take them off because, you know.
Okay, so principle number 1 is a pretty basic. Choose a healthy dietary pattern that governs 80% of your decisions, and using the 80-20 rule. So, you know, you can cheat a little bit, but do you have a healthy dietary pattern that you can use to make your decisions? The second one.
And by the way, what diet do you favor? I mean, as a template for that.
Well, I think, and if you look at the research, I'm a Mediterranean diet fan. At least that should be the basis of your decision. I think you can convert the Mediterranean diet to be vegetarian. I think you can convert the Mediterranean diet to be gluten-free. You can convert it to be more paleo if you want to emphasize certain things and exclude other things. I think fundamentally the Mediterranean diet is the one that we know the most about in Western subjects. You know that may not be true in say Tokyo, but it's certainly true in Western subjects.
Okay. Principle two.
So the second principle is choose small portions or smaller portions and eat slowly enough to let your body tell you when to stop eating and then listen to your body. As we know, I think a lot of people realize that when we eat, so food is information, but if it's going past our ability to interpret that information, i.e. I'm full, then you could probably eat 300 or 400 calories before your brain catches up to your stomach and says to stop eating. So I think this idea of mindfulness and portion control is a big idea that we need to keep in mind and really transcends research.
And how does the restaurant business subvert that concept?
I think most people, if you ask them, how many calories are in this particular meal that you're consuming at, whatever restaurant it is, I think, I don't know what the exact number is, but people usually underestimate calorie load by at least 100, if not 300 or 400 calories. And so, restaurants are really designed to create palatable foods and of course the all-you-can-eat buffet is the classic. I'm not walking away from here until I got all my $15 worth, and I don't care how, three weeks of food or whatever. So we, advertising seems to block a lot of the brain power that people have in deciding what they're going to eat.
Last time I checked in Vegas, it was $45, but times have changed.
Yeah.
Maybe where you are in Wisconsin, that they still have the $15 places. Principle number three.
I think you go off the strip, you can get a little bit less than $45. So principle number three,
right.
Unless purposely fasting, don't skip meals. Start each day with a balanced breakfast containing both protein and fiber. And I think that holds true in the research. I think there's been a lot of studies about, whether we should skip breakfast or whether we should make sure breakfast is an important part of the meal, all these kind of things. There's actually some very interesting studies being done actually by a researcher named Oren Froy in Israel, actually. And he's been doing some studies looking at when we shift calories towards the morning, it actually helps promote good circadian rhythm, which helps the HPA axis and stress control, which then modulates, feeding and desire to eat foods and certain things. So it appears that our body is designed to gain a good portion of its calories before noon, and that actually helps synchronize not only the metabolic function, which controls the circadian rhythm. So, of course, there's a number of other studies that would bear that out.
Number four.
Actually, four and five are sort of together. Number four, eat real food. Limit your consumption of prepared and packaged products and choose foods that would be familiar to folks 100 years ago. And five, quality matters. Invest appropriately in your food selections. Your life may depend on it. I think obviously they speak together to the junk food culture, the fact that we have so many empty calories and so many compounds that we're putting in our mouth that really aren't food. And our body has to find a way to interpret that as a health signal. And as far as I know, our body is not designed to consume a Twinkie and get health signals out of it.
So food is information, not just as gratification or the sum total of the micro and macronutrients in the food.
Exactly, and the quality of the food, how we prepare it, the time that we invest in preparing it. I think we have two different cultures. It's sort of like we've got, we have sedentary obesity growing, while we have this small, narrow group of people who are, getting fit as anybody's ever been fit in the world. Well, we have the same thing here. We have people, junk food culture growing, and then we have a small group of people who are, very, very particular about everything they eat. what we need is sort of a balance between that, so that most people, you know, are considering what they're eating, they're spending more time in the purchasing and the cooking of it. And I think when you invest that kind of time, you don't eat junk food as often.
It's like income inequality, the widening gap. We have nutritional inequality in this country.
Yeah, we do, and it's and unfortunately, there are places to break out of that. You know, people tell us about, you know, food deserts and these kind of things, but when you really look into it, people make decisions. They'll drive a long way for junk food. It's right. It's not, you know, you can put a salad bar right next to them and they'll walk around it and go further for something else. So it's not just the availability. It's really, you know, there's so many layers of things that we need to reteach people in their food habits.
Number six,
water should be your primary beverage. Drink enough and try to limit the number of liquid calories you consume. If there was one thing I could change or instantaneously take away or convince children of, is not to drink soda or to consider it a, you know, once in a great while. I have six children, as you know, and we have no soda in the home. And most of our children, when we go out, even if they're permitted to have a soda, most of them choose not to. My oldest son, he's 19, hasn't had a soda on his own, a decision, for probably 6 or 7 years. Convincing his friends of that is almost impossible. So I think, a huge issue in our culture. I wouldn't necessarily use the arm of the government, as the previous New York mayor had done, but somehow we need to convince people to do this on their own.
It happens at the level of the family, I think, you know, to the extent that that's possible. And you have some pretty extensive personal experience with that. You have how many kids? I can't keep track.
I have six. I have six children.
Okay. So you got to run a pretty tight ship there, because, you know, once the kids get out of, you know, get out on their own, a little autonomy, they can latch onto some pretty bad food habits.
I have just a few that are starting on their way close to leaving the house, so we'll find out. So my last principle is a preparatory principle. If you're going to have a success with food, you're going to have to keep this principle. It's be prepared for cravings that can jeopardize your plans for success. And that can mean, whether it's a diet plan or any other plan, that the fundamental principle of the body to survive will reach out for the nearest food, calories, whatever it happens to be. And, of course, you know, people under stress are going to crave salt and sugar and fat. So if those things are around, your body will naturally gravitate to them. That's a biological need. It's not just a lack of self-control. It really is a biological need. But you can prepare yourself so that those things around you are more healthy for you than those things that are around you. They're not, you know, the empty box or half box of Dunkin' Donuts that somebody brought to the office.
So this book encompasses not just diet and supplements, although it does devote a considerable amount to that. You also talk about various lifestyle issues. You talk about exercise. You talk about the important role of stress. And I know that you're actually involved in a lot of teaching around the issue of stress. How does stress impact us?
Well, you know, this is an area that I've been working on for over 10 years, and I finally got to the point where I'm writing sort of the guidebook for clinicians on this, at least the way that I've seen it. And the stress response system, what we typically call the HPA axis because of the components of it, when you look at that system in detail, you realize that it manages our circadian rhythm, it manages our appetite and our desire to eat food, it manages our metabolism, it manages obviously the way we perceive the world around us, how we perceive stress. It affects our mood. There's a relationship between depression and the HPA axis. In some ways, it is the master controller of everything. And I know that sounds, you know, everybody thinks that their thing is the master controller, but in many ways, it is the place in the body that is designed to be a surveillance outside the body for any threats, and a surveillance inside the body for any threats. And so it controls so many of the features. And so when we talk about aging, and we talk about immune suppression, we talk about, you know, cardiovascular disease and stress, and we talk about GI issues and stress, clinicians, I think, and you know, anybody, but especially clinicians that are looking at patients with chronic disease of any kind, chronic fatigue syndrome, Alzheimer's, cardiovascular disease, et cetera, the link with stress or the stress response system is tied in with everything. And unfortunately, clinicians have been a little bit, I think even those that are aware of this, you know, a lot of doctors talk about, you know, the HPA axis and stress, and they're learning about how to measure cortisol and DHEA, and these are all good things. But there's so much that has happened in the last 10 or 15 years that have not been incorporated appropriately in the clinical practice. And what I'm trying to do with this book, and hopefully it'll be out in about 2 months, is to teach the clinician once again about these basic principles, and then update what's been going on in the literature, because there's some very interesting things that we can tell about, you know, if somebody's been in burnout, or if they got depression, or if they've got a certain kind of stress issue. It can be measured with cortisol or DHEA, and then we can do something about it. We can actually intervene in many cases by reducing the stress load, by reducing, we talked about glycemic control. Glycemic control is one of the major things that the brain tries to do through the HPA axis. But if you are constantly eating the wrong things, getting poor sleep and all these other things, and messing with your circadian rhythm and your glycemic control, your body can't become healthy. And what I try to do in this book is point the clinician to the most likely problem areas based on what they're seeing in the patient, and going after the root causes of stress dysfunction, so that they can then see, you know, big changes in their patients that are affecting, you know, large chronic disease patterns. I'm very excited about this area, because I think, even though I think a lot of clinicians realize it's a big area, they don't quite understand it, and we've oversimplified some of the information, and oversimplified to the point that it's not as helpful as it could be if we go back and re-explain it with the right nuance.
And, you know, and I think according to statistics, stress and anxiety are, you know, these are among the leading causes of people to seek help from integrative physicians. And that's just the tip of the iceberg, because the ramifications of stress and anxiety extend to many of the disorders that we see. So if we can nail down stress and offer people a pathway towards alleviation of stress and anxiety in a holistic way, you know, looking at all these, you know, looking at diet, looking at sleep, looking at nutrition and so on, we can make a really big impact. So we'd love to bring you back for a discussion of that when that guidebook is out. We'll put it on our schedule for later this summer. So in conclusion, you know, what's today's Intelligent Medicine call to action? Of course, we want people to get your book. This is a book for the lay public, but also for health professionals. The Original Prescription, How the Latest Scientific Discoveries Can Help You Leverage the Power of Lifestyle Medicine. Dr. Thomas Williams. Now, also, Tom, there's a newsletter that is available to, is it just to health practitioners, or is it a generally available newsletter that people can subscribe to?
Well, right now what they can do is they could go, the book that you mentioned, The Original Prescription, is available on Amazon. They could go there. They could go to our website, which is the Point Institute.
Okay.
Point
By the way, great articles there, and, you know, lots of
right, there's lots of stuff to download, and if they're interested, they can order the clinician books online there at thepointinstitute.org or pointinstitute.net, and we can fulfill those directly to them. But the Original Prescription is available on Amazon. So, and they can contact us there. They can download most everything that I have. Other things that are not printed books is downloadable for free there. On various topics, so they can get that information.
Is the Point Institute has a newsletter? Am I mistaken? Or
we don't yet have a newsletter.
Okay,
we do have what we call the Standard.
The Standard, right?
Which is published by the Point Institute, but it's not a newsletter. It goes out, and they're topical. There's like 25 of them, and those can be downloaded on there as well.
Great. All right. Well, just fantastic resources there. I admire your dedication, because you know, you tackle these issues in a very, I think, a balanced and a scientific way, and present them beautifully in an understandable fashion. The Original Prescription by today's guest, Dr. Thomas Williams. Tom, thank you very much for joining us. I know your schedule is very busy, and you've been very generous with your time.
I appreciate any conversation we have. I'd like to inform and educate, so I appreciate the opportunity.
We'll keep getting the word out. We'll talk next about your new publication on anxiety and stress later in the season.
Okay, thanks. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for being there. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.